and support game fish status for red snapper in Texas state waters to end commercial overfishing. I would also like to state for the record that I'm opposed to a two-fish snapper limit as it would have a massive negative economic impact on our coast. For what it's worth, I figured today that I spent about $750 to take my boat and my kids to the coast for a weekend of snapper fishing, and I'm one of just tens of thousands of recreational snapper fishermen in Texas. Again, I'd like to thank you as a Texas sportsman and as a parent that wishes to instill in my children the same values that my grandparents instilled in me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. And tomorrow we are having an update on the red snapper if you're going to be here. And I think it's Tom Hilton next. Tom, you're remembering better than I am. Okay, Glenn Smith, be ready.
Thank you. Commissioners, I appreciate you being here. My name is Tom Hilton. I own Hilton's Fishing Charts and Hilton's RealTimeNavigator.com. And I'm here representing the Texas Recreational Fishing Alliance and, of course, all Texas recreational fishermen. I'm not here with the state parks or with any of the historical societies. I'm not looking for any money. I'm actually through my endeavors with the mapping companies that I've got, I've had a chance to study what's happening around the Gulf and on the East Coast, and I see what the other states are doing with their offshore fisheries. They're enhancing the habitat through artificial reefing projects. Off Orange Beach, Alabama is the center of my chart universe. I sell probably eight times as many charts there as I do here off of Texas. You'll see on the graphic here that the areas there off of Alabama account for 40% of all the recreational snapper caught in the Gulf of Mexico. That's an incredible statistic, especially when you realize that Alabama only has a 40-mile wide coastline. I really would like to thank the Texas Parks and Wildlife for heading down the path of artificial reefing. And I believe that we need to expand our horizons on our perspectives in that endeavor. The things that I see that Texas Parks and Wildlife has on the table are limited in scope, and I think that they would be overcapitalized. An incredible statistic, especially when you realize that Alabama only has a 40-mile wide coastline. I really would like to thank the Texas Parks and Wildlife for heading down the path of artificial reefing, and I believe that we need to expand our horizons on our perspectives in that endeavor. The things that I see that Texas Parks and Wildlife have on the table are limited in scope, and I think that they would be overcapitalized in short order. We have a very successful model over off of Alabama in place that we just need to emulate here off of Texas. And what that's going to do is it's going to translate into millions of dollars in revenue to the state. There's professors over out of Florida State University that have quantified the value of the reefs to the coastal communities. It's in the hundreds of millions of dollars just in the Florida Panhandle alone. As you probably know, the NMFS is pushing for a TAC reduction in federal waters, the total allowable catch, which will cut our existing snapper limits down to about two fish per person. I can guarantee you that people are not going to spend $3.50 a gallon or pay charter boat prices to go out and catch two fish. It's going to wreck our coastal economies. And what we're trying to present to y'all is if we're able to develop a plan to counteract this TAC reduction in federal waters by providing plentiful fishing spots in state waters, We foresee an energizing effect on the coastal communities instead of a decimating blow. Also enclosed on the graphic is the layout of the proposed Texas Great Barrier Reef. We consider this to be like the second wall of the Alamo when the first wall falls, which would be the federal limit to two fish. We Texans will rally behind the second wall, Texas state waters, to make our stand. I'm just hoping that we have a different outcome than the Alamo did. Our vision is to deploy about 4,000 reefs per year. The idea is to shock and awe both the fish and the fishermen so that they will not be overcapitalized. We've met with the GLO. We've met with Coastal Fisheries here three times. We've met with Senator Ogden. We're just looking for support from the commissioners to push approval for getting these areas inside of the state waters approved for us to provide additional habitat for the snapper. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tom. And the Coastal Resources Advisory Committee is working on artificial reef issues, so the staff can get you in contact with that group. They're going to be working up some recommendations on artificial reefs.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. I'm sorry, I got a little out of order here with the fishing and coastal. I missed one. Jim Smart. Sorry, Jim. You got put in the wrong stack. I apologize.
Mr. Chairman, I'm already in so much trouble. Mother and my wife are coming back in from a gambling junket in Louisiana, and I was supposed to be there at 6 to pick them up, and I'm not going to be there. So I may be at one of the local funeral homes.
We'll write you a note. We'll write you a note, Jim. I'd be glad to.
On a note, I would like to say that there's been a lot of talk about money today. And during the 9 months ago, we decided that there was a problem, so we decided to fix it. We're a 501c4, by the way, so we can lobby. So we went to see Senator Ogden, and we asked the good senator who chairs the Finance Committee to go over to the governor and see if they couldn't cut the cap off of y'all's funding. And it was very well received. He met with us, unbelievably, for about an hour and 20 minutes. And so I think we're not taking all the credit for that, but we'd like to tell you that, you know, sometimes we come in here throwing rocks, but we appreciate what y'all do, and we did try to push to get that cap released, and he promised us he would get that done. Looks like something's happening with the current press. Now, fisheries, I'm here on the record as state chairman of the Recreational Fishing Alliance. I would like to discuss the sea trout issue. I am uninformed about that issue today. I did not get here to hear staff. It's the opinion of the RFA that the trout should be managed as one zone. And we wouldn't like to see limit reduction without hard science. I think, you know, time will tell on that.
Proposed regional management?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
But I have not seen staff recommendation.
They'll be back next time. You get to be here next time at the next meeting. I think they'll do another presentation. Thank you.
But I think if we do too serious of a cut, we'll be in the same thing on sea trout that we're looking at in devastating coastal fishing communities as we are in the red snapper issue. We need to try to take a balance between the two. The fishing guys need to make a living. The recreational anglers need to go fishing. We need to have people in the restaurants down there. I think implementing any bait restriction would be a feel-good move that wouldn't help. There are too many live baits that are equally as effective. On the red snapper issue, Tom covered quite a bit of that. I had some handouts. Apparently, I failed to get those to y'all, but in the red snapper industry, Alabama is getting 42% of the recreational take. We're not anywhere near that. I think we're 12-14%. Don't hold me to that number. But what's interesting is the commercial fishermen take about 52% of their catch off Texas. And there's a huge problem with illegal fishing. We're seeing in the illegal fisheries in the newspapers quite freely. Mr. Krabs, which is in the handout that I had for y'all, said, it's been like, if you want to get away with something, go to Texas. So they're throwing their nose up at Texas Parks and Wildlife. And that was the reason we were going to Senator Arvin for funding. You guys are doing a great job. We're working very well with the folks here. We need the reefing project to head off the to shut down at federal level. We would hope that Parks and Wildlife would work with us to get game fish status in state waters on red snapper, so that we can, if the commercial guys won't go on the record against lowering the tack, that tells me that they're not going to work within the law as it is anyway. So why even let them fish in Texas waters? I thank you. I have a prepared statement, and if y'all could, I brought additional information so that y'all could go over it at your leisure. It's been a long day, I know. Thank you. I need that note too, Mr. Chairman.
All right, I'll be glad to write your note. Thank you, Jim. Glenn Smith. And James Wright. Dr. James Wright, be ready.
I came here today with a couple of suggestions or recommendations for upping the funding for state parks and wildlife areas, but I figured out while sitting here, if legislators were required to go through the Texas Brigade program, you might do a lot better with them once they got there in office. I was very impressed with those young
people. We get some younger legislators.
Yeah, or something. Yeah. I just want to second what many other people have said today about my group's support. I'm Glenn Smith of the Texas Progress Council. We fully support eliminating the cap on the sporting goods tax, using the bond money you've already been authorized to use, and getting the legislature to appropriate the debt retirement on that. I have two requests. I don't know if this is going to be in the recommendations of John Monfort's committee. I do applaud you appointing Senator Monfort, Chancellor Monfort, to head that up. I would urge ultimate caution about privatizing any part or all of the state park. It scares me to death to have our parks turned over to private companies for any purpose whatsoever. I don't think Teddy Roosevelt would have, on the one hand, created national parks and, on the other hand, turned them over to the monopolies he was busy breaking up at the time. So I would urge you to give that serious thought before we go down that path. Lastly, with regard to the Black Gap Wildlife Area, I think what I'd like to request on that is some sort, I understand that the land that I'm concerned about, which is between La Linda and Maravillas Canyon, has already been transferred to the General Land Office for some purpose. There's a lot of misinformation on that. If my organization has participated in handing out any misinformation, I apologize, but it's happened because so much of that transaction has happened in secret. Before that is sold to a third party, are taken away fully from Parks and Wildlife, I'd like to have some sort of public hearing on what's going on there. For those of you on the commission who don't know, the area I'm talking about is on the federally designated Wild and Scenic River. It is where the campsites are currently in the Black Gap Wildlife Area. Texans from all over go there to hike, to camp, to hunt during the designated hunting times, and to raft those lower canyons of the Rio Grande River. If it's taken away, it is possible that you won't be able to raft, or you'll add 70 miles of the river before you can take out handily from the Rio Grande. That will all but eliminate a lot of rafters from that part of the park. So I think I'll leave it today by asking you to have some sort of public hearing where we can collect the views of many people, look at what kind of deals have been talked about for the disposition of that property, and make a public and not a private decision with regard to the future of Black Gap. Thank you. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you. You're referring to the Black Gap exchange that resulted in 10,000 acre increase in the wildlife management area.
Yes, sir, I am. Okay. But to refer to that solely as an increase, it's like I said before, it's like giving away the Grand Canyon and getting some Arizona rocks in return.
Right.
That is a wild and scenic river. It's really important.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. The wildlife biologists who manage a wildlife management area designated the properties.
The
property that they needed to best meet the mission of a wildlife management area.
Oh, can I ask one other question? And maybe staff can tell me later. what's going to become of the public campsites there? Who manages it? If I go there tomorrow, do I register
in the WMA? The WMAs are managed by Parks and Wildlife inside the WMA. Scott, can you answer that?
That's correct, Commissioner. For the record, my name is Scott Bora. There are multiple campsites along the river there. There were some of the campsites in the sections of land referenced here. There are additional campsites that remain in the Black Gap Wildlife Management area.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. I'm not going to take the whole group's time, but I would like another public hearing of some sort to discuss it.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Wright? And then Mr. Averett. Ms. Averett, Diane Averett.
My name is James Wright. I'm president of the Texas Association of Bass Clubs, and we've been around quite a few years. We appreciate the opportunity to present at least four requests today from Texas Parks and Wildlife. I need to tell you that when I told my constituents I was coming, my server went down from all the questions they had to answer. First and foremost, the credibility of Texas Parks and Wildlife has taken a severe downside, as we understand that the cost of Jasper Fish Hatchery will significantly exceed $15 million. That's the cost that our bass stamp is supposed to pay for. We're asking the Commission and Budget Committee, particularly, to cap this expense at the $15 million figure until we figure out what's going on and what the cost is. We're asking, as stockholders in Texas Parks and Wildlife, a due diligence and fiduciary responsibility in determining how much money a Jasper Fish Hatchery is going to cost us. In our bill 1989, I believe that's right, is this going to impact the rest of those provisions that our bass staff was supposed to address? This is something we're concerned about. We may wind up with a $30 million fish hatchery and no improvements to our fishing hatcheries in the other areas. Indeed, you know, at the July budget meeting, you know, the part that you guys knew the cost was going to be greater than $15 million. They should have told us this up front. Secondly, we have a lot of misinformation. We need information from Texas Parks and Wildlife. We would like to request that a master plan of how Texas Parks and Wildlife intends to improve or maintain our bass populations in each public lake of Texas over the next 10 years. And this plan should include the management, improvement thereof, and expected fish populations. We'd like to see this plan available for public consumption within 1 year. Thirdly, the grass carp issue is not going to go away. It's an ugly boy, but it's not going away. And just for the record, the Texas Association of Bass Clubs supports significantly the activity ongoing at Lake Conroe by inland fisheries with an integrated pest management program and a grass carp program. We have a lot of controversy over that, but we support what they're doing and we hope they stay the course. TABC would request, basically again for information for our members, and we have a lot of misinformation out there. We'd like to see a scientifically valid model for the utilization of grass carp in hydrilla-infested areas. Waters be developed and present again in 1 year. We can do this for all sorts of scientific crops, for the human genome, etc. We can do this for the grass carp and its interaction with hydrilla-infested waters. If we had this carp, we could tell people in very plain English the effect of the carp, the effect of hydrilla, and what goes on. I think this information may be available, but we need it in a concise model. Still, we understand what we're talking about, a model. We can talk later about this, but we have that. And fourth, you know, we've heard a lot about the condition of our state parks these days. You know, we and the Texas anglers and their bass aspects, we would like to see that funds be specifically directed for the restoration. And one of the ideals we came up with is that the payment of utilization of our public waters by profit organizations should be implemented and these payments directed to the state parks. This is not a quick fix. It's a long-term fix. It's a long-term commitment of funds going back into the waters being used by profit organizations. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Diane Averett and then Will Kirkpatrick.
I'm Diane Averett. I grew up in Angelina County. I've known Mr. Parker for years. I've spent most of my life on the lakes and rivers in East Texas and have been a close observer of the wildlife in those areas. Up until about 10 years ago, you could paddle down any river along any shoreline in East Texas, and you could barely hear other wildlife but the plop of turtles going into the water ahead of you. About 5 years ago, I started noticing a serious decline in the turtle population. I'm talking freshwater turtle now, in the rivers in the area. This past summer, I have saw an alarming drop in the number of turtles. I paddled a 10-mile stretch of the Upper Neches River in June, saw zero turtles. About a month ago, I paddled the area that's in the new wildlife refuge. I saw four turtles the entire day. Lake Merval, a week ago, I saw two turtles on approximately 8 or 9 mile paddle around the shoreline. Something's happening to our turtles. I started doing some research. I started talking to other concerned people in the area. And what you have in front of you and what I'm fixing to read is what we have come up with is happening to them. The current state non-game wildlife commercial collection law in Texas is inadequate to protect or sustain a healthy population of box turtles or native freshwater turtle species. In fact, allowing the unlimited take of these species in Texas has encouraged trappers from other suburbs of states to come here. The majority of other states now have some laws in place to protect our turtles. Almost all Asian and European turtles are protected from harvest. They are near extinction in southern Asia due to human consumption, and now that part of the world is targeting our turtles. With a non-game wildlife permit, residents and non-residents can legally take and sell every turtle that he catches in any Texas stream. The rare turtles are trapped and sold to the pet trade, while the larger species are shipped alive to Asia and sold for food. Not on this, but an estimate of 50% of those do not survive the trip. Texas, Louisiana, and Arkansas are the main states being exploited by trappers. It's time to get laws in place to protect what we have left before the wild populations are depleted beyond recovery. Wildlife biologists from Texas Parks and Wildlife, U.S. Forest Service, Texas A&M, and numerous conservation organizations all agree that box turtles and freshwater turtles cannot sustain unlimited harvest and collection from the wild. Biologists also agree that numerous species have experienced rapid declines in recent years. Various other factors have caused some of the decline: habitat loss, roadkill, feral hogs, fire ants, and raccoons. But the majority of the decline is due to commercial trappers. This department has not sponsored any major field study to determine the current number in the wild. In fact, it would be very difficult due to the scarcity and elusive behavior of several species. The only method currently being used to determine the number of turtles commercially harvested is a mandatory reporting requirement. The non-game collection law requires licensed collectors to annually report the number of turtles taken from the wild and note each species with the date and location of where they are taken. This reporting requirement is probably not very reliable. Turtle trappers may not report actual numbers due to fear of having limits put on them. Also, there are numerous people who do not get a license but sell small quantities of turtles to local buyers. One individual that I talked with in Russ County admitted to selling to a buyer in Nacogdoches County and was not asked for her non-game license or where she caught the turtles. This buyer pays $1 per pound for any species, holds them in tanks, and sells them to a buyer in Louisiana. The same unlicensed individual also admitted seeing alligator snapper turtles in this dealer's tanks. A rapid decline in the Texas turtle populations has been observed by numerous biologists and concerned citizens, yet nothing is being done by this department to stop the downward trend. An emergency moratorium needs to be put in place immediately to stop the commercial take of all turtle species until biologists can do scientific field studies and determine how large the adult breeding population is. These studies may take several years, and if commercial harvest is not stopped immediately, several species could be so depleted that it would take generations for it to come back. Many of the larger freshwater species live to 60 or 70 years and several decades old before they are old enough to reproduce. I've seen estimates of mortality rates in young turtle hatchlings in the wild, and most agree that only 1 in 25 live to 1 year of age. Continuing to allow unlimited take of these older adult breeders could easily cause the irreparable decline of several species. Texas Parks and Wildlife has a duty to protect any species from decline. I'm asking today for you to pass an emergency moratorium on the commercial take of all Texas turtles until scientific field studies can be done and the data assessed.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ms. Avery. Will Kirkpatrick. Will, good to see you. Ed Parton, be ready. And Tim Cook and Dana Richardson. We'll be done. Will, good to see you.
My name's Will Kirkpatrick. I live on Sam Rayburn Reservoir. And if y'all are worried about money, I just bought my 33rd guide license a while ago. So there's another $165 in it. I've been pretty lucky. You're talking about the youth we had up here. I caught my first bass 52 years ago, 6-pound bass 52 years ago. A lot of people never caught one yet. I work for 4 different divisions of Bell System. I've hunted sheep in the Brooks Range up in Alaska when I worked up there. I've caught mahi-mahi when I worked over in Hawaii on a cable ship long lines. I've caught 10-pound bass in Florida. I've been down here. I was working in New York City at New York Tel Company headquarters in 1969-1970 when they completed the North Tower of the World Trade Center. And we're headquarters right across the street from that. I flew home, picked up a boat and motor, and drove to Sam Rayburn in 1970 to fish a BASS tournament. And it looked so damn good, I decided I'd transfer down here. So I got a hold of my rabbi, who was the head of labor relations for the whole Bell System, and said, I'd like to go to Texas and work. He said, you got it, son. And I've been here now 35 years. The last 5 years have been very interesting. I probably learned things I really wished I didn't know. I'm very disappointed in what the gentleman earlier was talking. He has no idea how much money has been spent that shouldn't have been spent. You've got an option. The people, I talked to you once before about this. The information's there. It shouldn't have been put where it's at. Mr. Cook, you made the statement about sour grapes. You don't know me, because that's not the case. I can assure you that they're never going to put a statue of Will Kirkpatrick up in the town square in San Augustine County. All we want is what was best for the anglers, and that's what we agreed to when we pushed for the stamp. In fact, Phil, if you remember, you and I were on the phone talking, and you said, Will, you got your television on? I said, no. He said, you need to turn it on. They just hit a plane in the World Trade Center. You remember that? What I was talking to him about was getting the fish hatchery put on Toledo Bend, because originally that's where we wanted. So the sour grape thing is not true, because we pushed to put it on Toledo Bend because we were told that was the best place, and then we got into your more bangs for your bucks, and we're not getting the most bangs for the bucks. You know, I did this for a living. I went through these specs that y'all have, and I made a statement to you that if you had a young law student in there, you'd fire him and put some of that stuff out. If we used that to hook up the telephones, you'd still be talking strings and tin cans. That's how bad it is. It's about that thick. We put in jobs that the stack of the spec was this thick, and we got them working. But that one is totally run out. And I've spoken to the people. I was based in Springfield, Illinois for quite some time, about 6 miles down the road from Fish Pro. But you got some problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kirkpatrick. Tim Cook and Dana Richardson, be ready. Oh, I'm sorry, Ed.
Okay, boss.
I'm getting to the end of the day here. Tim Cook and Dana, be ready after Ed.
Distinguished Commission, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I've had the pleasure of working with Texas Parks and Wildlife since this building existed and before. It's been an honor. I have some questions that's popped up in my mind, and knowing Mr. Robert Cook, Bob, like I do, my 3 minutes are going to be counted against me, even though I've got some questions.
I would like to know if all. I'd like to know if the multi-millions of people that utilize and use our resources realize how important it is if they bought a fishing license to support this department. We have all these people this morning talking about parks, or today. We've had people talking about other issues that are pertinent to them. We'll have people talking in a little while that use and utilize our water system, that so many of them does not own a fishing license. I think that we have dropped the ball by not educating people, letting them know how many dollars, much more greater, not good English, but the point is, how many more dollars it generates for a fishing license cost. If we buy just one fishing license, or if we buy one hunting license, or if we buy a combo. I think that somebody needs to wake up and say, hey, you know, users of our resource, support us if you want us to listen to you and your complaints or your gripes, or you want something better from us. That's not what I come to talk about. But I was just wondering how many of these people today, actually, if you asked them to show you a fishing license or a combo license, could they do that? And I'm convinced in my mind that most of them couldn't. And that's sad. What I come to talk about is a near-perfect fisheries. Start my clock. Thank you. The only way in all the years that I've had the pleasure of working with inland fisheries for that to happen is simply habitat as a form to protect and enhance our fisheries, the way of life for water quality, siltation, prevent erosion, and I could go on and on about what habitat and aquatic vegetation does. I am here supporting a program that's been put together by Dr. Earl Chilton, Mr. Phil DeRocher, and others with this department. And I'm convinced that it worked on Lake Austin. I'm convinced that it's going to work on Lake Conroe. If your people are given the opportunity to implement that plan, there are people out there that's putting an extreme amount of pressure on you and politicians not to allow that to happen. Please don't listen to these people, simply because I'm convinced that the program has worked and will work if it's given a chance. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ed. Appreciate your attendance at all these meetings. I'll tell you, Tim Cook and then Dana Richardson.
Chairman Fitzsimmons, thank you. Director Cook, commissioners, thank you very much for a long day. Want to come to you and also reiterate my support for the Lake Conroe plan. My name is Tim Cook. I'm the State Conservation Director for the Texas Bass Federation Nation. We're the grassroots arm of the Bass Angler Sportsman Society. We've got about 1,000 members in Texas and about 40,000 BASS members in Texas. So I've had the privilege of being able to work on this plan for the last year. I'm on the San Jacinto River Authority's Advisory Board. I've spent a lot of time working with Phil and Inland Fisheries, trying to come up with a plan that's going to meet everybody's objectives. And I truly believe that the plan that we've come up with is going to be successful. The goals of the plan are to maintain not only good habitat for fisheries, but also good access for homeowners and prevent any public safety issues or anything. But, you know, there are no simple, quick fixes to complex problems. And this plan is a two-year plan. And we're starting to see some wavering in support from the homeowners and the community because of the amount of vegetation that's in there now. 6 months is just not enough time to give this plan to work. And I'll tell you, my organization and my counterparts, we have 46 conservation directors throughout the country. We're involved in aquatic vegetation issues all over the country. I can tell you this plan, from what I've been told, has got to be one of the most progressive, forward-thinking plans that any of my colleagues have seen. If it is successful, it is going to establish a model that can be reproduced, you know, across the country. And is, you know, the way things are going in Texas, we're going to see this type of thing over and over again in our public water bodies. So coming up with a plan that fits all of the objectives is absolutely critical to maintaining, you know, our resources. And my organization advocates no net loss of habitat for fish, just the way we like to see it for waterfowl and everything else. So anyway, I would just ask you that you consider strongly giving all of your support to Inland Fisheries on this plan and let it take its course. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much, Dana. You got the booby prize. Last one. Yes, sir. We're here, though.
Thank you. My name is Dana Richardson. I'm a representative of the Lake Conroe Association, a property owners association that I helped found in 1977 when Hydrilla got its first amount, Lake Conroe got its first amount of Hydrilla. You all know the story of that. We ended up with a lake being 40% covered with Hydrilla, 100% of the shorelines. The Whitemore were put in, they cleaned it up, probably overcleaned it because we put too many fish in. Did we put too many fish in, or did the problem allow to get out of hand? That is what I'm here today for. We don't want a return of 1977-81 where we had that situation. Parks and Wildlife has come up with a plan. Potentially it's a good plan. But those pictures will show you we're not getting any control of this Hydrilla out there. They have a permit for 30,000 fish. They've only put 13,000 fish in. The Hydrilla is expanding way, way faster than I think they ever expected it would. The hot water, the summer heat, has obviously made it expand more and more and more. You've got two sets of photos there. One I took in July from the ground showing, and then the property owner over there took some this past weekend from aerial. It just shows you the expanse of this thing's going. And all we're trying to do is let's put enough fish in now to try to catch up with the explosion rather than go too slow and it gets out of hand like it did in 77 and 81. They've got a permit for 30,000 feet fish. They've only put 13,000 in, and what we're asking is they go ahead and put the remainder in, get caught up. When the winter months come, the fish will not eat as much, but they would still be eating, but the Hydrilla would be going down a little until spring comes and it sprouts back up. Our president, Mike Blyer, who was not able to be here due to a medical problem that came up at the last minute with his daughter, sent a letter to Earl Chilton and Mark Webb, specifically requesting that y'all approve the additional 17,000 fish. You've got all those photos there. I think the photos tell 1,000 words. And all we're asking is let's speed this little process up so we don't go back to the 77-81 over Hydrilla result overstocking. Thank you very much.
I do have a question for Ms. Richardson. You might have already stated, what was the number of triploid grass carp that were put in the late 70s? Do you know?
Politicians say that's a good question, so let me try that out.
Well,
we put 270,000, A&M put 270,000 fish in. Let me tell you how that came, but that number came. In 1978, this commission approved putting the Whitemore into Lake Conroe. A lawsuit was filed on it because they said it was improper notice of a rule change. The legislature had just made a rule change requirement. It wasn't improper. There was proper notice. We had gone out and bought those fish in a hatchery up in Arkansas. 4 to 6 inches, what those fish would be when they went in the lake. It was expected there'd be 60% of them lost because of the size. We had to feed those fish during this lawsuit thing. When those fish came out of the chute, they were about like this. There wasn't any predation on those fish. That's why the thing happened. Now, whose fault is it?
I was just trying to get an idea of the relative number.
Yeah. So we're talking about 30,000 now against 270 then. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Anything else?
Appreciate it. Thank you. Any other testimony come before the public meeting, Mr. Cook?
Don't believe so, sir.
All right, sir. We are adjourned. Thank you. We'll see you in the morning.
Thank you.